Well, the ancient Essenes, the authors of the Dead Sea Scrolls, now take us even another step further. They knew this. And to me, this is the beauty, this is the relevance. We are experiencing different situations of the same conditions now that they experienced, and they say that every initiate who's ever walked this earth experiences in their lives. Although the conditions have changed because of technology and culture, they're the same challenges in our lives. The Essenes left us with something that is so eloquent and so beautiful and so powerful. Please do not be deceived by the simplicity of what I'm about to share with you. This is sometimes called the Great Commandment or the 11th Commandment. And this is the way the Essenes say that we find that place of peace in our bodies. They actually tell us how to do this. They say that to have this peace that allows the miracles, we must first know the peace in our minds, desire the peace in our hearts, and fulfill or become the peace in our bodies. So once again, we have mind, heart, and body. Well, how do we know this peace in our mind, desire it in our hearts, and fill it in our bodies? This is the beauty of the Essene insight into the conditions of humankind, whether it was 2,500 years ago or today. And here's what they say to us. The key, they say, is to love ourselves. Now, they also acknowledge that perhaps one of the most difficult things for a human to do then, 2,500 years ago, or even in their future, is to love ourselves. Why is it so hard for us to love ourselves? It's easier to love something else. It's easier for us to care for and nurture and to give to something else than it is to love ourselves. Well, the Essenes acknowledge this and they use this to our benefit in the 11th commandment, or what's called the Great Commandment. They said to find this peace in our bodies, love God with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our strength, and all of our soul. If you don't like the word God, you can replace that with whatever you believe the essence is that permeates all of creation, that undulates through the fabric of life and allows us to speak to the cosmos. Whatever word works for you, love that force with all of your heart, all of your mind, all of your strength, all of your soul. This is where people say, well, that's too simple. Here's the beauty of what they've done. They acknowledge that there is absolutely no separation between that force and us. That we are one with God. We are one with that creative force, the intelligence that underlies all of creation. The moment you love that force, believing it's something else, with all of your heart, all of your strength, all of your mind, and all of your soul, what you've done is you've just loved yourself. And they found a way to get around our challenge of loving ourselves. If we choose to see ourselves as separate and distinct from the creative force that permeates throughout all of creation, that's fine, they say. You'll understand it soon enough, they say. Go ahead and see yourself in that separateness and love that creator in this way. And what you've just done is loved yourself. And the moment that you begin to do that, that is the moment that something happens in our bodies. Now our own science is beginning to tell us and to digitally validate what that something is all about. The oneness between us and this creative intelligence that underlies all of creation is the key. And maybe this is best described in some of the Essene texts, where they actually say in their own words, beside the river of our world stands the holy tree of life. There doth my Father dwell, and my home is in him, and this is the key, the Heavenly Father and I are one. So they're saying this in the only language they have 2,500 years ago. So in our belief that it's easier to love something other than ourselves, we're invited to go ahead and do that, and in effect, we have just loved ourselves, perhaps in a way that we've never seen before. When we do that, our own science now is beginning to understand that it has a direct predictable, measurable effect in our bodies, and that effect begins right with the human heart. I know when I was in school, in my college years, I was taught it's our brain that regulates every cell in our bodies. But through our brain, we regulate our immune system, our metabolism. How we age and deteriorate as we go through life is regulated by our brain, as well as the endocrine functions in our bodies. What we now know is that while this is certainly true, to some degree, the brain, our brains, cannot work alone. Our brain must be tuned to something. What researchers now know is that the human heart creates the signal that tells our brain what to send to our cells. It is through our heart that we create the quality of a signal that either affirms life or denies life in our bodies by the quality of the signal that it sends through our brain. We call this entrainment. When our brain receives very high quality signals from our heart, and our cell receives very high quality signals from our brain, we can say that our heart-brain cell system is highly entrained. When the quality of signals between our heart and our brain and subsequently our cells is less than optimum, what we'd say is there is a lower degree of entrainment that occurs there. The mechanism that regulates our entrainment, at least in part, appears to be human feeling. How we perceive the world around us, from the moment at the checkout stand at the Safeway, where we may be impatient in line, to the marriages or the divorces or the jobs or no jobs and money, no money, and our questioning of who we are in this world. Those are all feelings about which we harbor a field around our heart. That field either affirms or denies life in our bodies by telling our brain what kind of information to send to the cells in our bodies. Apparently, the ancients understood this, certainly not in the same language, perhaps not to the same degree, and they understood the importance of the quality of the feelings that we harbor in our bodies.